Hello, everybody. Welcome to Life Before Elite, the Hacker's Illustrated Guide to Script Kiddie History. I'm glad you've all come to see some of our humble origins in the hacking world. Who here is willing to admit they were once a script kiddie? Yeah? Oh, yeah, that's right. Wear it proud. Yes. As someone who's been sort of a professional pen testing guy for many years and informally a hacker before that, I kind of hold near and dear to my heart that early 90s period where everyone seemed to be elite hacks wars all the time. And this is kind of my love letter to all that, and kind of looking back and seeing where that came from, where all those terms originated, how old they were, what they all meant to all of us. I think everyone had an experience kind of like that growing up. So I'm John Dunlap. I'm a security researcher, penetration tester, exploit developer. I'm a big fan of Hacker History. I'm a demo scene mega fan, which there's going to be a demo party at Hope this year. I'm so stoked for that. You guys should go if you aren't already planning to go. And I'm an amateur geneticist. I'm doing a talk at DEF CON this year on my implanting encrypted data inside living life forms. And this is Alex Ivanov to my left here, who is also a penetration tester. Yeah. You want to talk about yourself a little bit,
yeah,
Alex?
Of course. So, I'm a pen tester, but I've been hacking my whole life. Script kiddie, OG. In my spare time, I like to collect knockoff, bootleg game consoles, Famicom clones, handhelds, anything like that. I love Alibaba. And I like online scams, quackery, anything dodgy. All of that bad stuff is just so enjoyable, which is why I really embrace the script kiddie aesthetic to this day. Gotta love it.
Yeah. All right. A couple of before we like truly start kind of slides. Obviously, we didn't name drop our employers. Whoever those guys, none of this represents their views. Don't hold it against them. I want to throw out a special call out and thanks to Jason Scott and Text Files. A lot of this research I did on like script kiddie history would be impossible without Text Files. There just isn't enough archiving and history of our sort of shared heritage. And you know, the more that this is absolutely 100% of my life, the more I look back and like thank God that's there. So if you guys ever get a chance, give Text Files a hand any way you can. I was going to look for some kind of donation link, but if you read his help Text Files, he's so humble about how you can help Text Files. So what does this talk about? We're going to talk to you about what the history of script kiddies are. We're going to go through some loving examples. We're not here to make fun of anyone or shame anyone. There might be some slightly cringy stuff, but I think we've all been there. A little bit of nostalgia, and kind of get into like how we got to this stereotype of what a script kiddie is. Because it's funny, it's older than you probably think, unless you were really around in like all the way back to the freaking days. And it's remarkably consistent as far back as it goes. But yeah, last one. We're not calling anyone out. I tried not to have too many actual screen names in this, but if you saw your own, it's loving. Trust me. What is a script kiddie anyway? Probably almost everyone in this room has some kind of conception of it, but we have to define. Basically, a script kiddie is what a lot of people would call someone in the hacking community who doesn't make their own hacks, right? Someone who goes and downloads some pre-made exploit and just runs it against everything. But there are sort of connotations there, right? This is a term that would be used against someone who's new, who's newbie, who's not contributing the way other people think they should be, someone who's not adding to the community. They're just using existing exploits to go cause havoc for fun. And the implication is also that it's a younger person, someone who's a little more boisterous. And you'll be surprised as we go through this how consistent that kind of stereotype is. I think every community has some kind of greenhorning ritual where people are sort of hazed into it. And, you know, it's funny, you see all these posts, if you look through old BBSs, of people like, I want to learn how to hack, and I know nothing of it, but please don't call me a script kiddie. Like, I heard about the script kiddie thing, I want to let you guys all know that I heard about it, don't call me that, but please show me the scripts.
What do you think the next post is?
Yeah.
Script kiddie.
Yeah. And how do I hack Hotmail?
How do I log in if I only have the username but not the password? Seriously, that occurs on so many Yahoo answers.
It goes back so far. you know, then there's this other side of it is that maybe it's back and forth between people who are trying to disrespect each other, and maybe you're talking to people who are not script kiddies. They're really hackers. They're just, it's kind of like, you're not as lead as I am. You know, there's a little hacker group inter-warfare. That's definitely a thing. There's always, before we had Stack Overflow and we were literally assigning each other points, which we've been doing a lot longer than you think we have, too. We're trying to fight over status forever. How human of us. So, in my opinion, we're going to sort of start from the middle. Script kiddie as a term really hits the popular American world, even, I should say, consciousness in about 1998, 1999. By that point, it was very saturated, and you can kind of find it everywhere. So here's a zine called Morpheus, and this guy gives a quick definition of what he calls a script kiddie. Let's see. They are above the so-called lead hacker because they can actually root boxes even though they have no idea what they are doing. They just run exploits against box after box and are usually after wares of credit cards. They have a large collection of exploits and programs with big, beautiful, shiny buttons. Don't worry, we've brought shiny buttons. There will be shiny buttons later on. But the stereotype is deeply ingrained. You know that there's elite speak, there's the scripts, the easy-to-use hacks are there already. Here's another person trying to define it. This is from a guide Grifter put together on why you shouldn't be a script kiddie. It makes absolutely no sense to be a script kiddie, says Grifter. Now you're not expected to write some program on your own, you know? Again, the stereotype is you don't write your own stuff. And it's kind of paradoxical because if you do programming at all, you know that everyone steals everyone else's programs or cribs off them or adapts them. So, you know, what's the problem of using other people's hacks? And the anxiety is that you're just going to steal, and never give back to the community because the actual hacker spirit is innovation and doing your own thing and research. And that there's this deep cultural anxiety among hackers that that's not going to happen. But I think most people who were born in the mid-80s going forward know the script kiddie term from the jargon file, all right? As far as I can tell, I bet you someone's going to jump up and tell me I'm wrong, script kiddie was added to the jargon file somewhere in the late 90s, like 97, 98. And this is where I first encountered a formal definition of the term. The jargon file is actually much older than that, but that's when I think it was added. The lowest form of cracker. Script kiddies do mischief with scripts and rootkits. That's kind of a new addition. Written by others, often without understanding the exploit they are using. No understanding. They just use, fire, forget, cause mischief. Limited technical expertise. You don't know what you're doing. Easy to operate, pre-configured, automated tools to conduct disruptive activities.
Click here to hack.
Yeah, click here to hack. But, you know, the automated tools, that's a new wrinkle, right? So we're sort of in the heyday of this term becoming very common. And so we see definitions like this, and a couple of other things. We got the term being mentioned, frack, for the first time in 1998. There was a very prominent ZDNet article in about 1998. Going backwards, though, and trying to figure out how old it was, I was surprised how far. But before 1998, it wasn't such a wider cultural meme in the wider IT industry, in the wider computer-using world outside of hackers. this guy, Alive Overflow, you've probably read his Twitter, traced it back to about 1996, and that's kind of where I started working to further trace where we got script kiddies, not just the word, but the concept. So here is, here's a script, right, meant for script kiddies. From the Hackett zine on the Cute Skunk CD zine collection. And it says, script kiddies cut here with the implication that you shouldn't read, if you're a script kiddie, you don't want to read my whole article, above this in the actual zine. There's a big explanation of his exploit. And if you just want to hack AIX here, here's how, just run this thing. So again, the implication is still there that, you know, low effort, high, yeah. Here it is in the pejorative sense in frack, sucks to be busted, sucks worse to plead guilty to being a script kiddie. So you always have to dig deeper when it's already a term that everyone's supposed to know. The further back you go, though, before 1996, you stop seeing script kiddies as much. You start just seeing kiddies. So we have people talking smack about kiddies in 1993. AT&T thought that beige boxing was too hard, so they made it easier for all the kiddies to rip them off even more. So before script kiddies, we were just calling people kiddies, which is kind of interesting. And then you see it kind of mixed with another phrase, and we hear about K-Rad kiddies. And this is like...
How many of you have heard of this one?
Yeah, who's heard of K-Rad kiddies? Yeah, a couple. And this is where, like, my millennial brain melts, and I'm like, I've never heard anyone talk like that before.
We probably spent, like, a couple hours, like, finding the true root of the whole, like, K-Rad.
And that's kind of where you have to... So before there were script kiddies, there was K-Rad kiddies. And here's a reference to it in 1993. Enjoy your K-Rad Elite Codes kiddies. And that's when I know this was really a similar and related term, because we got the elite speak. We're being called Elite Codes kiddies. So it's basically script kiddies, the same kind of behavior. How far back does it go? Like, really far? Like, towards the beginning of elite speak as we know it? the beginning of an era. There's records of people being confused about this even back in the day. In 1994, this guy's talking about, was it K as in kilobytes? You know, we know that Wares people like this, like the Wares dudes, use K-Rad. So where does it come from? And people argue with Tim here. It was from a magazine, says this guy. Yeah, I heard it was from a magazine, 84, 85. And... this guy's like, who cares, right? It's just something
it just
you would
sounds
say.
Rad.
Yeah, it just sounds cool. And then someone else is like, maybe it was from an Apple BBS. I seem to remember that. Like, it was with the Apple people, right? That's the first real clue of origin of K-Rad, as far as I could tell. And so steps up this one fellow who says it's much older. And this is, in my opinion, the best answer to the origin of K-Rad. And basically, this fellow says that he ran a BBS in the early 80s, like probably one of the early BBSs for Apple people. Where do I come in? I'm one of the original four MPG members, the BBS, and yes, we did start the K craze, spontaneously without inspiration from outside sources. It started spontaneously for all of us in 1982, so it's really old, you know, predates most of us. It wasn't K in terms of kilobytes, it was K as in K by. As in, I guess going back to maybe party line days, people were in the habit of saying things like K high, K by.
And yeah, that just use it as like a sign off, like a quick, like, K by.
K by.
Yeah.
And, that was just like a kind of a signature, an inside joke of that group of people, but it turned out to be a really big BBS. So claims a guy like 10,000 people, and it spread from there. And that kind of makes sense because you see K-Rad and K-Cool and the K-Craze going back to about that period. And anytime that everyone starts spontaneously using a meme like that, it becomes an inside joke about how worn out it is. I think that's kind of the like early lead. Let's see. more from him. Let's see, we hung out, ate pizza, cracked wares. There's Association of Wares again, going back to, again, like 82. was the first K-Cool dude. It just sounded cool. And then I saw this term, and I was really confused. Now, like the K-Cool, K-Buy stuff, it made sense to me. It all sort of reminded me of Wares and Elite Speak as I had known it growing up in the 90s. Then I heard about rodents, and I was like, whoa, WTF, what is a rodent? It kind of like clicked for me as something you might call a skitty, like these are rodents. Because one thing you might see, I'm going to show some demonstrations of it, is that one of the recurring accusations about skitties is that they take more than they give.
And they're kind of like pest-like, you know, like rats, think about it. It's like vermin, you don't want that around, they're a nuisance.
And talking to older people about it, one of the things that was always explained to me is that people were associated with the old Wares scene, the people pirating software in the early days of it, didn't like people who just downloaded and used bandwidth as opposed to uploading. It's kind of like BitTorrent today, nothing changes.
Bleach, again,
yeah, so as far as I can tell, rodent goes way back. So those same people who were mocked for being K-Rad, once K-Rad became a meme, before that you can see people being called rodents. Here's the definition of rodents.
Scum of the computer underground.
These are usually teenage kids who recently received a computer with a modem and want to do all sorts of illegal, harmful stuff. Is that not a script kiddie? That's a script kiddie.
That's so nice. Did you get a pewter for Christmas? Got a modem?
And, you know, on the stuff, feel like a rodent because you don't know what a 950 is. So it definitely has some kind of freaking connotations. I like this one, though. Speaking of Christmas, someone wrote, like, a poem about it. 'Twas the morning of Christmas, and all through the house, a creature was stirring, that little louse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, and lo and behold, an Apple computer was there. The rest of this, I wish I had time in the talk to like go through all of the stuff he says, because he basically makes Night Before Christmas into an entire like phone freaking debugging session.
And you even see it there, like, I hope you like my K-Cool mods. Like,
yeah. and he has a spinning cursor with a K, so that's there too. We got complaining about it from the Real Freakers Guide. So it goes way back, way back. So what are script kiddies like? And we went through some of the characteristics before, but I wanted to like try and dig up as many patient zeros as possible. And see if were script kiddies quite as annoying or as beggy as people remember they are. They are. One of my primary sources for this, because you know it kind of sucks trying to do history, is like the cultural aura of an annoying group of people is people complaining about it, and you don't, not as many records are saved of the people being annoying, right? Because when someone comes and floods your IRC room, you tend not to save it. So here's someone begging for help. I'm looking for a hack program which messes up that computer I'll be hacking. Or I'd like one which will only have to insert an IP address. Has anyone got or can give me the address? Frustrated people explaining why that's all wrong.
But then again, this script kiddie knew exactly what he wanted.
Does anyone know how to hack a Hotmail account? Sorry, wrong question. You lose. I love that. Yeah, people were always mean. It wasn't just Stack Overflow deleting your questions for being wrong. It goes way back. How can I access a Hotmail account with only a username and no password? If that probably wins the award for the most recurring question.
Yeah, this one surprisingly came up quite a bit.
To this day, it's like,
yeah.
It must be like, can we hack Facebook? Always asking for help, you know, no, they realize their limitations. Can anyone please help me? I need to know how to boot people off the chatterbox. All over the place. But also bragging and confident, you know, it's not all humbleness. We owned you, hacked hard, biatch. This is what you get, moron. How does it feel to be a lame pansy? Do you know how many graphics I have to post on your stupid account? So these were sometimes humble people, but not always. They had confidence. And then there's stuff where you're not sure if people are trolling or they're serious.
Yeah, there were some that were just like so outrageous where it's like, do not know if legit, like,
yeah,
is this guy serious, because, or is it trolling?
Yeah, there's a line between script kiddie comedy from people frustrated with it and people who are really that obnoxious, and you really can't tell it sometimes.
Yeah, it's hard to tell if it's somebody like baiting a script kiddie or if it's just like really some script kiddie going off at it.
I was on the fence with it. I hacked into AOL trademark. I used the ghosting technique. Ghosting means I signed out without anyone knowing who I was.
Ooh.
Ooh, I hope you did. Wait, Lenny Loon, probably world's bestest hackers. Let's see. And then there's whole other levels of this guy. I hope he did this with a script.
And then lead speak had like different levels. There was like simple lead, and then lead where like M was done with like four different characters.
Yeah, this is like high lead.
You were doing like, it was high lead if you used like more characters. If you were just replacing like a few. Yeah.
Simple, but is effective and will compile on every Linux box. Linux is the preferred OS.
How many of you can read this without like squinting too hard? Come on. Yeah, it comes kind of naturally, doesn't it?
Let's see. Seriously, this is like people writing what looks like leetspeak fan fiction. The adventure begins. The Republic of the Galactic Order of Couriers assembly in order to overthrow their wares-mongering oppressors. The SPA, a young doodle boy of the name of Luke Downloader, is killed to the cause by YZOBOW, all the name of Zero Day Want Shinobi. I mean,
just imagine this like floating like the Star Wars text.
You know,
down the screen.
Yeah, I mean, if only, like, if the handles I could have thought of were ever as cool as Zero Day Want Shinobi. Zero Day Trains, Young Downloader. I want that to be on my tombstone. This one is definitely parody. I don't have time to read it all. And really impressive, while I was researching this, I found that Jason Scott himself had tracked down what could be the first instance of leet speak. In 1978, we have one of the messages from CBBS.
There it is, and cool.
The first BBS? Yeah. Yes, he is cool.
The very first word spoken in lead.
I kind of...
The dawn of kitty kind.
I suspect, you know, I didn't get a chance to fully verify this, that maybe such abbreviations might be even older, but it gets much harder the further you go back. I listened to some, there are a few recordings of party lines from back in the day, and I was looking as hard, like, how do you hear someone speaking in slang, or people, maybe they did it on teletypes. Can I get some teletype records? Like, maybe it was possible. Like,
well, I mean, I remember this from when I was a kid. It was a huge faux pas to, like, talk and leave. Like, that was a no-go.
Yeah, but, I it would have made me so happy to have found, like Brian Kernighan or something, like, in the early 70s. 70s being like, you lead Hacksaw, that would have made my day if someone's PDP message was there or on a stack of punch cards. I think this is one of the most heartwarming and redeeming posts about script kiddies I found looking around. And this is from Cobalt Strike. They're the people who run by Ralph Mudge. They're the people who make Cobalt Strike and as well as Armitage. And I think he was trying to respond to people asking about help for Armitage. And he says, hackers often complain about script kiddies. People use tools without any clue about what they do. What's the difference between someone who will become a good hacker and someone who will stay a script kiddie forever? I know the answer. Here it is. The number one trait for a successful hacker is the ability to reason about things one can't directly observe.
One simple trick.
Yeah. I think that's really sweet, though.
It's eloquent, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's maybe not the interest of people who just want to pwn everything.
That's right.
So how do script kiddies hack?
Moving over to my side of the talk, I'm going to talk about all the cool like script kiddie tools.
Yeah, we got shiny buttons for you.
Yeah, let me just move this up closer.
And I'm sorry if you were a sysadmin in the 90s. Some of these might have been the bane of you. Okay.
Yeah, get ready to see some major pain points. Okay, so script kiddie tech, like what do they use? How do they get the job done? Well, script kiddies got their code as they came onto boards. Think about it, back in BBS days, they would just like copy paste anything that looked relevant, just get on there and hoard it all. These were often done with like very little understanding. They didn't really care to read the script, understand it, modify it, or whatever. They would just grab anything that looked good and stockpile it for later.
How do I run that .c file? Bash won't take it.
Your very first lesson is learning how to how to compile, how to tell the difference is great. So yeah, they learned to just like abuse these scripts, fire them at anything, whether they worked or not, you know, swap them, download them, copy paste. It was crazy. And over time, you know, script kiddies, they learned to like leverage commercial tools, things that had like a legitimate purpose. They would use like auditing tools, frameworks, other stuff. It's kind of odd. Like back in the early days, everyone's computer was just connected directly to the internet, you know, from their modem. There was no router. So back in the days before NAT, it was just really easy to like see boxes with like an FTP server running or Telnet or something else. So you could just reach someone's machine easy, and like a lot of these attacks would be very effective. They didn't even have to configure a port. That's why you see a lot of references to just like IP address or whatever. Port forwarding kind of like killed the whole rat.
It seems like figuring out NAT was like some kind of like head explode moment for people who are not invested in learning technical skills. Like, no, I can't.
They just wouldn't even try it. Like when that started to become a thing, people got like, you know, the cable internet with the router and stuff. They would be like, how do I like port forward from my RAT? Or like, I can't connect to the RAT after it was like deployed. Like what's up? It blew their mind.
But
like,
where's the ports?
Yeah. So yeah, all this stuff was just fire and forget. You know, they would just, you know, go for it, leverage everything. Like denial of service ones, like WinNuke, which I'll talk about later, literally just had a button where it's like, fire. That's it, just go.
And
think fast keyboarding, frantic mouse clicks. It was all that stuff. So you want to read the disclaimer? Yeah, we don't want to anger anyone.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these were like pretty started at least as legitimate tools, legitimate research. Like the history of doing development about hacking tools and publishing them at places like DEF CON, or you know, putting out your network administration tool. You might have made too powerful a network administration tool, and hackers like to use it.
Yeah, and so, like especially with like the remote administration tools, like a lot of those were built with like legitimate use in mind.
So if you were using back orifice back in the day or something like that,
for legitimate uses,
or you made it, like, we're not talking smack about you. It's just it picked up among that community. I'm sure there's some very smart folks who use some of these tools.
I've used a RAT for legitimate purposes, totally. So what makes a good script kiddie program? It's got to be easy to use. Think GUI, okay? Low configuration, no setup. They can't stand that port forwarding. This was way before that. High damage, you know, they don't want simple reconnaissance things. No. This is far, far below. We're looking for, like, DOSing someone's thing, etc. And anything that can be, like, leveraged widely, like, applicable to most things. Like with WinNuke, it was virtually every version of Windows up to, like, 98 for a long time, and people weren't quick to apply patches back in the day.
Very satisfying.
Yeah. So where did they get their kit from? You know, think about it. Scripts from BBS. Very simple. Like I said, they would go on forums, collect things, just copy and paste them, trade them. They're not like giving credit to the original developer, and they're not contributing. They're not modifying them and reposting them. Like, oh, here's my useful modification to this, or oh do that.
I kind of miss that system. You know, like, I kind of like the old zines. I'm sad that we don't have more zines. Like, I every once in a while, I see someone try and start up a zine. I really want it to pick up, you know, because the zine culture was so huge and was so prolific. I mean, some of these ones I saw in text files,
they published
hundreds of issues.
Yeah, imagine literally seeing, like, an exploit on paper from a zine, like, reading about it and, you know, typing it up and using it. Here we have perfect one. This is a denial of service against Timbuktu, which was like network administration tool back in the day. Very simple. This is exactly the kind of thing that, you know, script kiddies would go for and be like, ooh, yeah.
And like, you know, so like you can see indications that you're expected to just be able to hit that port. Like there's nothing in the way.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of these, again, easy hacker programs, simple things. You know, think about like frameworks, kits, like assortment of tools, like anything that was just like packaged and like readily available. Network administration kits were great because who doesn't want remote access? That's really appealing to the skiddy. And next we're going into a popular set of like tools back in the day. This was NetTools for Windows. Okay, this was like before there was like any Linux distribution with the tools on it, before Kali, Backtrack, whatever. A lot of these kids were like on a Windows computer, and this was like a Windows set of like network administration tools that were spread about. And it was really popular because it had a lot of things that would be appealing to someone looking to cause chaos. We had a port scanner, HTTP server, email spoofer, Flutter.
Yeah, it's kind of this weird dichotomy you see where like some things that look like they're oriented towards sysadmins and look like they have some legitimate functionality, you go down the list and you see like Flutter.
Yeah, that one's like, oh yeah, this is all, you know, I could see this in it. What?
Okay.
Why would I need to spoof an email in my own environment? Like,
and I think, you know, some of that interplay might be, you know, if you read the old, Bastard Operator from Hell comics, you know, like old articles where sysadmins were talking about just how mean they could be to the losers, not users. Maybe they thought they had the right to hack people as well, or the need to. But these kind of things definitely caught on in the like script kiddie community.
Yeah, and then they're like the ones that are just like really outrageous, like DOSing, popular with the script kiddies. They want to take your thing down. They want to wreck your ship, pwn you. How do they do it? WinNuke, ping of death. Then again, that's one that's like, you don't even need a tool for that. Mail flooding, IRC flooding. I don't know if any of you are like old enough to really like remember the pain of IRC flooding. That was awful. Booting, yeah.
Still happens occasionally.
Yeah. More efficiently dealt with. Let's move on. Yeah, so this is beautiful. This is WinNuke for Windows 95.
There are a lot of versions of WinNuke out there. I use this one because it has this beautiful graphic.
Look at the graphic. There's a literal nuke in the background, but it's like red. There's hellfire skulls. It's great. And look at that. Like we promised, right in the middle, that big, beautiful button, nuke it. All you have to do is put in the IP address, not even a port.
Yeah.
You could put a message. It's optional. And it'll induce a blue screen of death on like your victim's PC. That's great. Frustrating. You lose your Word document, whatever. This will really send a message, you know, like high impact. Like, we took you down.
Press enter to hack.
Yeah. And as you might understand, yeah.
Satisfying revenge it is. And this made people really mad.
Yeah, people were just not amused. Like, and this one, this is like from a guide where it's like, what is WinNuke? What do I do? Like, how do I prevent against this? And my favorite quote from this one is, let's see. Are you getting my point? WinNuke is lame. It's just lame. And the way that they talk about it, you know, the person who was using this little program included a big nuke button along with accompanying sound effects and graphics. Like, why did they put the sound effects on?
Well, I think it's what's fascinating is this.
So you feel good when you fire it, damn it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is he feels like he can, like, reason with the skiddies by writing this into his, like, counteracting. This particular guide isn't for hackers. This is for, like, sysadmins who are trying to counteract people WinNuking them.
Yeah.
And he feels like the hackers are going to read this.
And the majority, the majority of this guide wasn't even technical. Anyway, it wasn't. It was just like trying to explain, like, why did people do it? What's the deal? And this person was just frustrated. They just spent time like ranting about why they just hated it.
I like that someone weaponized it into an MIRC script too. That's hilarious. Just kicking everyone off IRC by blue screening them appeals to me massively. I kind of wish I had been old enough to do that when you could do that. I'm not gonna lie.
Those days are gone. Or are they?
There are definitely a couple of channels on Ryzen that would be fun to do that to for a moment.
Yeah. And then we have like less sophisticated stuff like the ping of death, right?
The ping of death.
Yeah, of death. So yeah, sending a ping, really, really large packets, more than would be tolerated, knock somebody offline. You don't even need to download anything for this. It's straight from the command line. It is a bit much typing for a script kiddie, but you know, some manage to do it. There's some options there, some switches, some...
You'd have to learn that whole like run cmd.exe thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's advanced.
That's another fun one to look up on Yahoo Answers. And again, with like the frustration of like DOSing someone, booting them offline, we have hit it.
Then we got booters.
Yeah, booters. Yeah, Xbox Live. Yeah, this is a big thing with like console games that are in network.
To this day, it's kind of funny. Like doing research on this, you see people playing like Call of Duty to this day are like freaking booters.
Yeah, and this is like a whole genre of videos on YouTube to this day of people posting like their booter videos, or like damn booters, whatever. But anyway, look at this thing. It's all GUI driven. It's for Windows. Put in the IP address. You might have to specify the port depending on what game. There's some research here. But then again, you can even take it to the extreme. There's an extreme flood option that you can tick right there.
Extreme flood. That's extreme. Some 90s style.
Yeah, yeah. Extreme. So, yeah.
Network fatality.
Yeah. And this was just brutal because, like, sadly, it didn't always take the person out. Sometimes it was like a slow suffering. It induced lag. It would really just... It was painful. It was beautiful.
There is to this day a competitive scene for designing these things that kind of amuses me. Please don't boo me. I found a bunch of modern ones on GitHub, and I decided to not show them because I don't encourage that kind of thing.
Responsible.
As cool as it is. Moving on.
Flooding. Here we go.
Yeah, flooding. I just wanted to show this because Elite Speak.
Yeah, this is a great example. But who hasn't seen this? It's frustrating. I mean, like, rarely would it actually take something down, but it just messes the whole atmosphere of the chat. Really frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, skitties will resort to things like this when they can't actually, like, down a service or whatever. It's just about the annoyance.
Yeah, you know... Speaking of like remembering IRC things, I just have to say, like, yesterday I got a chance to talk to Terry from Temple OS.
Oh yes,
IRC
that was a glorious opportunity. That was fantastic.
That was beautiful. I just couldn't help but like committing that to record.
Yeah.
So,
rats, remote administration. Now we're moving into the fun stuff. We're like actually getting onto the machine, hacking it. Yeah. So anyway, I'm just gonna go over a few quick ones that were just like really popular back in the day. Back Orifice 2K, you know, done by the Cult of the Dead kind of released DEFCON 99. Legit use. Netbus, ProRat, Sub7, and JRat, just to name a few. And
I wish there was a good way for me to format it, but I found this list of like which ports connected to which rats, and it was like 1,000 lines long. It was from like 1996.
Yeah, and a lot of these rats, some of like the really early ones didn't even require a password to connect to the server. You know, the person who's infected. A lot of them didn't require a password even until like later on, that became a thing. Some had hard coded passwords which were discovered way later.
You know, some people were really in the habit of like stealing back the rats from people, like hijacking someone's remote back door. I think that's cute.
Yeah. So with this one, this is just the client interface for Back Orifice 2K. You can plug in the IP address, the port which the server's running on. You can execute commands and stuff. This one's not...
What I like about this guy who's running it is he has skinned it.
Yeah.
It's got custom... I miss skins, and I found a bunch of like kind of blinged out instances of Back Orifice.
What's better than a GUI?
Yeah.
Clip art.
Like, please... Please, Port Swigger, I'd love skins for Burp Suite. Let me skin it this way.
Remember those Winamp skins?
Oh,
yes. The days.
Also, it has plugins, which is nice.
Yeah. And this one's great because it's all buttons. Like, look, look at the UX on this, man. You got some fun ones. Server admin, eject the CD-ROM drive. These are legitimate, right? Start a program, right? But then again, we have funny ones like navigate to a URL or play a sound, display a graphic. Why would you really need to use that? Not too sure.
Put something spicy up there.
Yeah,
I like the Open CD-ROM one though. That could be like fun for
and
a while.
That was like a go-to. Like that was the first thing because it's like unnerving. It's unsettling. You're sitting at your big tower beige computer, and then like from the side of your ear, you hear it. It opens your own.
Yeah. Like I hope someone makes a payload for Open CD-ROM for Metasploit. That'd be great. I would use it.
Who needs calc.exe?
We need to get it done before CD-ROM.
Wait, there are no more CD-ROM drives. Yeah. Whatever. Missed opportunities.
Hey, I think it's funny though with the buttons that, you know, if you think today the stereotype, like the cringy hacker stereotype, is always the command line. People know now hackers equal command line. Like green text, black background, that's a hacker. And like before,
some of these you could just communicate with over like raw connections and just like issue commands, but not with this one.
People like the buttons.
Yeah. And this is a great one coming up. ProRat.
I just had to put this one in because of the unicorn.
Yeah,
it's
look
great.
At that. We have Photoshop
ProRat
now.
And it has options like funny stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, prank gag ones here, like mouse annoyance, like randomly, like, right-click your mouse, left-click your mouse, you know, just cause other issues, but play sounds, yeah.
Some of the other ones, like, they ride the line between maybe this is for legitimate use. This one's great because it
this one's just going for it.
Yeah, it's going for it. It's,
you got,
like,
Pegasus
all the
up
way
in there.
In.
It's all grayscale, you know, the aesthetic is nice. Yeah.
And has a button that just says keylogger.
Yeah,
you know?
Straight. But I think this one had, like, a really nasty one. What was it? Nah.
Yeah.
But there's a button that says funny stuff. Like,
well,
literally, there's
the one I was puzzled about. I couldn't find what it did. Give damage.
Yeah, give damage. Very vague. But you want to press it, right? Like.
Yeah. Okay.
Super effective.
So what have we learned? People will go a long way to make an easy hack.
Yeah, they love the GUIs. They just love the ability to just, like, get it done, do it, little understanding, leverage it quickly. Who doesn't want to optimize? I mean, you can't blame ScriptKiddie culture for wanting to do this. It comes naturally. And, like, there's a whole evolution there of, like, ScriptKiddie is using, like, legitimate auditing and security tools and, like, network administration tools. It's, you know, it aimed to make it easy.
Yeah. And there was always kind of an element of pranking and what would be the most funny thing to do to people and what would make the exploits easiest. So I think as a community, we can kind of reflect on, like, is there a way we can kind of capture that fun without encouraging people to be dicks? I think that's something to think about.
Like, imagine if, you know, modern tools had, you know, bad clip art, unicorns, nukes in the background with skulls and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I could use that.
The lighthearted.
Closest we get is, like, anime girls pop up sometimes. Like, Armitage has, like, cute moe girls in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's finish up the talk by talking about ScriptKiddies today. And I don't have a whole lot to say about, you know, how things have changed about ScriptKiddies since 1998, because nothing changes.
As you can tell from K-Rad, Rodents,
This goes back, it's kind of a property of hacking.
Yeah,
as people get into it, I think the first thing people hear about hacks is that you can do malicious things, and people will always go for that first in the easiest, least learning way possible a lot of the times. You still see elites speaking games. You still see trolls using it to sort of indicate that they're here to cause some trouble.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about it. Booters are still very much a thing in online gaming. Like, the same stuff is around. It's perpetual.
Or, you know, what's a newer one? Disclosing people's IPs from a game is a big deal. Like, when there's a two-tier proxy situation, they'll kind of suck everyone's IPs out of it.
Even when they can't do anything with it, they'll still do it because it's cool. Like, this is your IP, man. Like, you know, it has an effect on someone.
I'll tell people where your parents' router is. And, you know, this is, like, part of the challenge of getting people into the hacking scene. You know, we're in this situation where, like, we need more hackers. You know, people post all the time.
Yeah,
that,
like, think
that
about it. Like, there's a great need in the security field, and I think that, you know, ScriptKiddies make great, you know, security engineers someday.
Well, it's like,
in theory.
The problem is, like, teaching people how to not be lame as they go. Yeah. So, we're getting towards the end here. We talk about, like, recent ScriptKiddie phenomena. You were talking about people trying to collect botnets from IoT devices.
Everyone wants a botnet, you know.
You know, a big one. There was a whole wave of, like, paranoia in the tech press about ScriptKiddies and Eternal Blue. If you guys are familiar with that exploit, it was basically taken out of some NSA leaks, and malicious people, as well as pen testers, adapted it into a usable exploit, and there was all kinds of, like, worrying in the tech media that ScriptKiddies would take Eternal Blue and just go nuts, because it was one of the first exploits in a long time that worked against workstations very, very reliably. So you could go all around your school network and wreak havoc, which had not been so easy for a while.
One minute.
Okay, that's what we've learned. Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Skiddy for life, right? Woo.